The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, June 22nd, the Welcome to the Gun Show edition. I'm Gabriel Roth, an editor at Slate and the dad of Eliza, age 6, and Leo, who is just about to turn 3.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. I'm a podcaster living in New Hampshire. I'm the mother of Henry, who is almost 16, Teddy, who is 14, and my stepdaughter, Lily, who is 17.
And I am Carvel Wallace, a freelance writer living in Oakland, and I am the father of Georgia, who is 11, and Ezra, who is 14.
I am thrilled to be back on the podcast with you guys this week, thanks to the miracle of antibiotics. This week's episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is dedicated to antibiotics. Thank you, antibiotics, for everything you've
and
done.
And lenient doctors,
and,
right?
And easygoing doctors who are going to make it so that our children someday will never know the miracle of antibiotics. This week, we've got a question from a listener who doesn't know how to talk to her four-year-old about guns. And another who is wondering when's the right time to have a second child. Of course, we will also have triumphs and fails and recommendations. And then in Slate Plus, Rebecca has some exciting family news that is too personal to share with the wider public, if you want to know.
I'm not pregnant.
Wow, what a tease.
Now you've given it away.
Now you've lost all the listeners.
Now they're never going to sign up.
It's not that.
The news is not that Rebecca is pregnant. If you want to know what the news
is, I might be pregnant.
If you want to know what the news actually is, it's not that Carvel is pregnant either, but if you want to know what the news really is, you have to sign up for Slate Plus. You can do that by going to slate.com/app to download the latest version of the Slate iOS app and get Slate Plus for 90 days absolutely free. That will all come in our Slate Plus segment, but first, triumphs and fails. Carvel, you want to go?
Yes, I have a triumph that is similar, Gabe, to a triumph that you laid out when you went to Canada and told your kid that you were going to bring back a special gift, and then you set up unreasonable expectations and had to suffer through them. Mm. We have that on a much bigger scale. So what happens is that early in my son's middle school career, we told him that one of the methods we tried to get him to deal with his grades is we were like, if you get your grades to this level, we'll buy you a computer. And he was like, that sounds great. And then he never got his grades to that level. So all of middle school passed, no computer. He was using this old, like, discarded thing that we had around the house. And then at the end of eighth grade, we decided that the computer that he was using basically became unusable. And he started making films and doing more stuff on his laptop than just watching YouTube videos. And we were like, well, we should encourage this. And I have a little bit of money coming in from a book deal that I did. And we decided we were going to buy a computer for him. And then we were like, well, we can't buy one for him and not buy one for his sister, who got straight A's all the way through. Like, what kind of message does that send? She knew that, like, the computer was tied to his grades. She knew that he still graduated with, like, a 1.5 GPA from middle school, and that we're still going to buy him a computer. So, like, what the hell is that? So we were like, well, I guess we have to buy her one, too. So then and we were like, all right, we'll figure this out. We'll figure this out. But we made the mistake of telling him that we were going to do this. And now he will not stop sending us links and telling us that he needs various, like, speakers and components, and this is how much RAM. He's become obsessed because he's kind of an obsessive person with any creative venture. And it's driving his mom crazy because she's getting the brunt of it. And I actually, just before I got on the air, he called me up out of nowhere and said, this is unrelated, but he called me up and said, Dad, I've been thinking about our relationship, and I want to make sure we're on the same team going forward. Like, I feel like we've been, this is what he said to me. He said, I feel like we've been on different, I was like, I thought we were the same team. He's like, no, not in my mind. I feel like you oppose me and I want things and you want different things and we fight. And I don't want it to be that way anymore.
This is a kid who's trying to step it up from a MacBook to a MacBook Pro. That phone call is all about getting from the MacBook to the MacBook Pro. That's all it is.
And I said, I was like, I got to go in the air right now. We'll talk about that later. But I said, so help me God, if you bring up this computer to your mother again, you're not getting one. And then he was like, I thought we were going to be on the same team, Dad. I was like, I got to go. So I don't know if it's a triumph or a fail, but I feel like we should not have mentioned that we were planning on doing this because he's become obsessive and it's become really a trigger point. And now I just want no one to have a computer and I just want to throw everything out the window. So we didn't handle it right. We should have just surprised him with it and let that be it.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to say fail. Seems like a fail to me.
Thank you. Thanks for confirming my word.
You're still going to have to spend the money. You're still out the money. But now when it comes, it'll just be a disappointment because it won't be the one that he had specced out.
It's not going to be what he wants.
No. Bummer. Rebecca, your turn.
I'm going to go with a triumph today, potential fail tomorrow for mine. When we bought the house that we currently live in, it was summer of 2013. So my kids were about 4 years younger. Henry was 11. Teddy was 10. This house was owned by a carpenter before we lived here. So there is a really, really cool treehouse built behind the house that we live in. It's like wrapped around a tree. It's not particularly huge, but it's just done in a really cool way, like a carpenter would know how to do. And the summer we moved in, I thought, oh, this is really cool if this is here, not realizing that my kids were the following summer, like, going to be too old for a treehouse. There's definitely like a cutoff where like a treehouse is like no longer a thing that your kid is in any way interested in. It's sort of like the swing set you buy for your backyard, like awesome when they're like 2 and 3, and then it just sits there and rots. So this thing has been back there, you know, for the last 4 years, filling up with dead squirrels and all sorts of other critters. And this summer, Henry, about a month ago, when it started to get warm, decided as a summer project, he wanted to fix up the treehouse and have it be like a hangout. And I thought it was just going to be maybe he'd go sweep it out or whatever. He swept it out. He's brought furniture up there, rugs. He's hung art. He bought a bunch of like those beautiful outdoor globe white lights and strung them on the trees kind of all around the treehouse. And he's made this basically like totally cool boy cave out of this treehouse. And just this past weekend, for the first time, he had, you know, like 6 friends sleep over, and they were hanging out in the treehouse. They slept indoors, but they were hanging out in the treehouse on the balcony of the treehouse and like under the treehouse and chairs for like 6 hours outside. It was so cool. It was like, you know, my kid is sort of like earnest enough to sort of like do something with this, you know, otherwise wasted structure and make it something cool and create sort of like an attraction for his friends to come over. Now, of course, the reason I say fail tomorrow is because potential fail tomorrow is because I'm sure we can all imagine, you know, what some of us may have done in our later teens with our private treehouse space. But for now, it's just incredibly cool. And it makes me really proud that, you know, he's got the ingenuity and the work ethic and the artistic nature to turn this horrible, wasted structure full of dead squirrels into something beautiful and cool. And I've got tons of pictures of it that I could even share on the Mom and Dad Are Fighting Facebook page. If anyone is interested in seeing it, you will see that it is a little bit cooler than it has any right to be, considering it was fixed up by a 15-year-old boy.
This sounds like a fantastic triumph and also a terrifying liability.
Oh, yeah. There's that too.
Do you have insurance for the treehouse? Sorry to be that guy, but like you're going to need liability insurance on that treehouse.
He lives in Brooklyn. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff he has to think.
It's time for that umbrella policy, right?
It really is. Absolutely. And congratulations to Henry and congratulations to your insurance company.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right. I have an incredibly annoying kind of long buried fail. It's a fail that I like failed at a long time ago without knowing it. And the fail just resurfaced to bite me in the ass. Leo has decided he's not going to sleep in his crib anymore. And he was always a great sleeper. This went from like one night he's like, okay, I'm going to sleep in my crib. Here I am in my crib going to sleep. Night, night. Bye-bye. To the next night. I do not want to go in my crib. I will not go in my crib. Like, will like punch us and kick us and like refuses to go in the crib. And can now like flip himself out of the crib and potentially do himself a bunch of damage by flipping out of the crib. So like, fine, we'll get you a big boy bed. But like, can we please like have a minute or two to transition from the crib to the big boy bed? The crib that we have, his sister used it too. It's one of those ones where you can take off the front panel with the bars and put on an attachment that turns it from a crib into a big kid bed. And so it was a crib for Eliza, then it was a big kid bed for Eliza, then it went back to a crib for Leo, and now it's going to become a big kid bed for Leo, and this is great. Great times. So I told him, I will change your bed. You just need to chill. He refuses to chill. He insists on sleeping in the armchair in our room instead of going in the crib, because that's what he will do. I spent 3 hours in the basement storage space picking things up and tipping things over and looking behind things and looking underneath things for the attachment part for the crib. And it is not there. Like, it's literally nowhere there. So I spent, you know, like 3 hours looking for this part. All it is, it's like a piece of wood that is the right shape and has holes in the right place that you can screw it onto this crib in the right place that makes this thing functional, but it is not in the basement. I have no idea where else it could be. At some point, I did not take sufficient care of this one, like, crib conversion kit piece of wood thing, and now I don't know what the hell we're going to do. We have to either get him a new bed or figure out some other thing, and meanwhile, he refuses to go to sleep, and for the past 2 nights has slept in the armchair in our bedroom next to our bed, and the whole thing is just a ridiculous mess because I can't take care of a fucking piece of wood. That is my fail.
I have one question for you. I'm sure that you've already done this, but I have to ask.
Yeah.
Did you look in his room everywhere, like in
That's
his
exactly
closet?
Because
I can imagine
ask.
You thinking, like, I want this to be in the place where I'm going to need it.
Yeah, I did. That is a great and potentially helpful question, but I did think maybe it's under the crib, maybe it's in his closet, maybe it's behind his closet. It's not in any of those places.
Well, it will eventually turn up.
Right,
the problem
sure
is by that point, he'll be 9 and a half.
That's right. And like here, oh, there's that perfectly shaped
there
piece of wood. Yep. That's
could have
exactly
saved so
right
many hours of therapy if I had found this earlier.
That's exactly right. So anyway, none of us have been sleeping. The whole thing has been just a disaster.
I bet you can order it as a separate part. I bet you can.
It discontinued. I tried.
Oh.
Yeah, he's
damn
already
it
been down that road.
Thanks for going.
That's the first thing I would have.
Yeah, you're going through my whole decision tree. Now the crib, both crib and the conversion wood piece are all discontinued.
Wait, you're in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any like hippie woodworking neighbors who can come over and like, you know, help you out, craft something for the crib, or is that too dangerous?
No, I would do that, and I sort of proposed that to my wife. We don't have a hippie neighbor, but we have a like a handyman who I know would be able to like cut a piece of wood into the appropriate size, and that is one of the many options we're considering. But the point is, like, why am I now, like, it's been several days, and I'm like, it's now a project rather than just screw the thing
you're
into the thing.
You're at a point where you have to like commission people to like create things for you.
Yeah, when am I going to be home when the guy can come to take the measure? Measurements on the thing to cut the piece of wood. Jesus, I hate life. I really do. If I can't take care of a piece of wood, how am I supposed to take care of two children? Welcome to Slate's Parenting Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
We'll get to our first question in a minute, but we do have a couple of announcements. First of all, we want to tell you about one of Slate's other great shows, The Gist with Mike Pesca, Slate's daily podcast covering politics and culture. Recently, the show interviewed John Ronson, who is the screenwriter of the movie Okja, comedian Larry Wilmore, and Senator Al Franken. This week, they're talking to Wallace Shawn, one of the great actors and playwrights of our time. So check it out. It's daily, every weekday afternoon, slate.com/thegist. News, politics, culture, whatever strikes their fancy. You can get it from slate.com/thegist or iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And secondly, let us know what you think of our show. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. You'll see pictures of the treehouse where Rebecca's teenage son will be getting baked.
Dying.
Pretty soon. all right. And finally, if you've got a parenting quandary you'd like us to tackle, give us a call at 424-255-7833. Let's hear our first question, which I think is from Megan.
Hey, Mom and Dad Are Fighting. Love the pod. This is Megan. I'm the mom of an almost four-year-old son. And over the last couple months, he's definitely become very interested in guns and what they do. In our household, we do not own guns. we talked to him that guns are powerful and are weapons that can hurt people, and he talks about guns killing people. And we've seen guns in superhero books, and, you know, he talks about it with his preschool friends. But what I don't want to do as he gets older now is create such a situation where we have told him that, well, we don't own guns and guns are violent, that he goes the opposite direction and wants to rebel and, you know, become so curious about guns that now I've, like, started down this path of parenting that maybe I need to rethink. I'm a high school teacher. I'm thinking this along the lines of, like, telling kids never, 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 never drink, and then what do? Rebel and drink. So I don't want to create that in my own household with guns. Any advice would be appreciated. Thank you.
Rebecca, you were saying you live in a very gun-centric part of the world. Yeah.
because, first of all, I grew up on Long Island in New York, and I have never been a member of a family that's owned guns. Gun culture is not a part of my life. But I live in New Hampshire now, and gun culture is a part of the lives of kids that my kids are friends with. But rewind before that, I have a very, very wise parenting guru in my family, my Aunt Eileen, who is the mother of two boys who are now adults, my two brilliant cousins. And she told me when I was pregnant with my first son, you can be as anti-gun and pacifist and hippie like me as you want to be. Your kids will make guns out of sticks and tape, and they will play guns in the yard. And it's something that you just got to know seems to be wired into kids and into boys in particular, was her experience. And damn it, she was right. When my kids were like 2 and 3 and they'd be in the playground, they would start picking up sticks that looked like guns and running around and playing, you know, Star Wars, shooting each other with fake laser guns made of sticks on the playground. As I got a little bit older, I had the same struggle that this mom is having, where I thought, I really don't want to have toy guns in the house. I don't like, you know, kind of the message of that. I don't want the play to be simulating violence. And then I don't remember how it came about, but at some point the compromise was Nerf guns, which are bright orange, have tons of mechanics on them. They have like slides that make cool noises, like chick, like all the cool gun noises, and they can shoot at targets and run around. And that kind of seems to have done like the trick as far as getting them through that phase where it was kind of compulsive to be fascinated with guns and play games like role playing games that involve guns. When they got a little bit older, the airsoft phenomenon kind of came through our town. And my older son, with his own money, purchased his own airsoft rifle so he could play capture the flag games in the woods with his friends. And they did that for about a year. And that seems to have passed. But I'll tell you, kind of going along with this play stuff, this contextual play, and, you know, doing it in a safe way with like plastic stuff, which feels safe and fun. And at the same time having, you know, sort of reinforcing the values and beliefs that we have about guns. And also, by the way, 100% talking about safety all the time. If you live in a rural area or an area where guns are prevalent, it is very, very important to know which of your kids' families have guns in their house. Be aware of it. Talk to your kids about it. Talk to the parents about it if you feel comfortable doing so, and just make sure that those safety things are in place. But honestly, they seem to have kind of grown out of it. They're not turning into potential gun owners, I don't think. If they wanted to, I guess that would be their choice. But it would be my preference that they didn't. And they seem to have kind of gone through it by, you know, providing them with appropriate, safe, you know, somewhat creative, with potential to be creative play-wise, and active simulations of these guns. But I'll tell you, I struggle with this exact thing. And the first time my kid picked up one of those gun-shaped sticks, I didn't even know what to do. I was just like beside myself. So the struggle is real when it comes to gunplay. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with everything Rebecca just said. Like, this is one of those things where you kind of have to calibrate, knowing that parenting is a push-pull, and that if you pull in one direction, your kids are going to push in the opposite direction, and you kind of have to take that into account. So, like, if your goal as a parent is to establish a situation in which the kids do exactly what you want, then you're going to be perpetually disappointed. Because if you say, well, and we made this mistake about so many things like sugar and TV and like whatever. We made the same mistake everyone makes. At the beginning, we're like, well, our kid's not going to have any sugar and they're never going to watch TV. And like, and it was just like, we were idiot. We didn't know what the fuck we were talking about because we were like 20 something. But as time has gone on, it turns out that, you know, as parents, we set the standards, we set the line here, and then the kids cross it. They go 10 yards past the line, and you have to secretly be okay with 10 yards past the line, if that makes sense. And so, like, with the gun thing, yeah, we weren't fanatical about no guns in the house, no, like, playing guns, no gun, because whenever something feels to a kid like a personal parental obsession, then the kid becomes really curious to dismantle that, because kids don't like it when their parents are obsessive. That's one thing I've noticed. So kids may understand a rule, they may understand like a boundary, but when it feels to a kid like it's a trigger point for the parents, then they almost instinctively want to be like, what's that about? Why do you hate that? Let me pick at that. And like Ezra said last week, it's really hard for kids not to defy their parents. Like, you have to work at it. So I think for us, I think the parenting around guns doesn't come with the actual toy guns. That's my point. The parenting around guns comes in every other aspect of your interactions with the kids. Mm-hmm. It comes with the way that you teach them to navigate conflict. It comes with the way you teach them about the history of the country. It comes with the way that you teach them to understand how people deal with feelings, how people deal with fear. And that's stuff that goes everywhere else. But if you try to focus all that on like the physical object, then yeah, I think the chances are pretty high that they'll develop a kind of, you're basically fetishizing the physical object.
That's so kind of what gun culture is, right? Like, is the fetish, kind of is what, the fetishization of the object, you know? And it's like,
yeah, I think,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. And so we were like, no guns in the house. That was the rule. We were like, don't play with toy guns. But yes, they found sticks and broom handles and whatever, and they were off with the guns. And then when the Nerf thing came along, for us, it was the Nerf water guns. There were Nerf, like, little pellet, those little, like, foam pellet things. They were mm-hmm. super into that. We had kind of mixed feelings about it, but overall, I don't know. It somehow worked. Like, we actually just did this 3 weeks ago. It was super hot, and there were two water guns in the house, and we just burst into this crazy, like, three-way water gun fight where people were jumping out from behind pillows and, like, hiding in the closet. And, you know, it just was, like, so much fun. It was me, Georgia, and Ezra. And, like, it was just a blast. And I got to, like, play that role. They were doing it. And then I got to play that role where I came in and was like, look, you guys, hand over the guns. Like, none of this, you know. And then they gave me the guns. And then, of course, I shot both of them because that's what dads do. And then they were like, oh, my God. And then we ran around and did that. And I don't know. Like, it was fun. And I also feel like, if I were to be like, no, you can never have this kind of fun, you can never do this, then that would be a kind of weird fetishization of the actual physical object of an orange plastic gun that I'm trying to avoid and that it sounds like the caller's trying to avoid. So I think I allowed some room for the fun of playing war, the fun of hiding behind things and jumping out on people and sneaking up on people, which kids enjoy and which is everyone enjoys. So there's fun for that, but they know our feelings about guns. We've had so many conversations. And also, I try not to fetishize the actual physical object. I think now that my kids are older and they can give me feedback on how they understand the world, they seem to be getting it. But the other thing I have to say is that particularly for my son, what happened with Tamir Rice is something we have to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I tell my son, like, you can't stand in the street with a toy gun.
Right. And that was an airsoft gun, right?
That was an airsoft gun. You
That's
just
right.
cannot do it. And that is what it is. And there's no part of him that wants to test that theory because he gets it, because he saw what happened. And so, you know, that's something that like when we talk about what guns are, we have to talk about the whole thing. And because the rest of our values as a family are relatively well established, it seems like they get where gun stuff fits into it. And I would also say one more thing, too, which is that there's been shootings in the neighborhood where my kids went to elementary school. And I wrote about this one time. One time my daughter said, yeah, there were, and they've had shelter in places. And my daughter said, we heard these fireworks one time. And my daughter said, she was like eight. She was like, those aren't guns. I was like, how do you know? She's like, well, when we heard gunshots, they sounded like this. And this is what all the teachers did. And those were fireworks. And that not only did that unsettle me so deeply, it also made me realize that I don't have to talk about the physical object of the gun in the house. I can talk about where our culture is and what our what the horror is of the way guns are used in America. And that's what the kids understand. And that's what I'm really trying to get them to understand. And so it's not about a plastic gun,
right?
If that makes sense, you know? I can trust them a little bit now.
Yeah. It seems to me that what kids, like when Rebecca describes her kids picking up sticks and using them as guns at a very early age, or when Megan, the caller, talks about her kid wanting to play with guns, what those kids are looking for is a fantasy, right? It's like it's a fun, exciting fantasy, and it's a game, and it's power, and it's like strategy and fun. And that aspect, that relatively innocent, relatively benign aspect of gun culture exists. Like, we have that for adults too. I certainly spend a fair amount of my time watching movies and television shows in which people are shooting guns in a way that for me is like exciting and thrilling and not really doesn't have any real weight to it. It's completely in a realm of fantasy. And I think it's fine and probably good to find ways to give your kids like space for that fantasy to happen. Like space for it to be like a fun, safe thing. And then also at an age in an age appropriate way, make sure that they understand the reality, whether that's the reality of you may go to somebody's house and their parents may have a real lethal weapon in their home and here's how to behave around that, or the reality of you may go out on the street and if you're carrying a toy gun, then because of the way you look, you may be in danger of getting shot by the police. Or like all of this has to be able to coexist in our parenting. Otherwise, you can't sort of strip away. Otherwise, you wind up stripping away this perfectly ordinary, innocent childhood desire to play and fantasize and imagine stuff. And that can be, the challenges of that are different depending on where you're situated. But those are challenges that everybody has to try to figure out. And the solution is probably not, okay, no guns, no talking about guns, no watching shows with guns, no playing with guns, no water guns, no Nerf guns, none of that anywhere. We don't do that because we're a family that only abhors guns.
It's like the Simpsons episode where Chief Wiggum says to his son, you know, you're not supposed to go in there. What is your fascination with my forbidden closet of mystery? You know, you never want to create the forbidden closet of mystery.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
For your
right.
kids. It never works. It works 0% of the time to have a forbidden closet of mystery.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Megan, for the call. Hope that was helpful. Let us know how it goes. We have another call coming up from Alyssa.
Hi, my name is Alyssa. I'm wondering how you handled the transition from one child to two. My husband and I both work full-time out of the home, and our daughter will be two in August. We're finally able to stretch out a little bit with date nights and getting back to our own hobbies, and I really love it. I've been surprised how difficult it's been to find a balance with our family life, our careers, and our passions, and I'm nervous about going back down that road. But my husband and I both have three siblings, and we still spend a lot of time with all of them. So I worry about not giving our daughter a sibling. So how different is going from one child to two? Is there an ideal age difference? What are your thoughts about only having one kid? I'd love to hear you guys talk about that. Thanks. I love the show.
This is a big question. Carvel, should this listener have a second child?
Yes, let me tell you what to do with your family about whether or not. No, I don't know, because I mean, who knows? Like, I don't, whether or not people should have a second child is entirely up to them. It's entirely personal. I would never tell a specific stranger you should or shouldn't have a second child. Case in point, I think I said this already one time, is that when we just had our son and not our daughter, we asked one of our close family friends who had two kids. We were like, should we have a second kid? And she flat out was like, no, don't do it. You're going to regret it. Like she, and it was like the heart, we were like, whoa, lady. And then we went ahead and had the second kid. And now they're best friends. Like this family friend and my daughter are like the best, you know, like, and like the point is we, even in our innocence, we knew not to listen to a stranger about whether or not to have a kid because you're going to do what you're going to do. And we knew we were going to do what we're going to do. So I would say I can't tell you whether or not to do it. I can tell you what it's like. And one of the jokes, I'm so glad I get to, I've been making this joke for 15 years. I'm glad I get to say it in public, which is that one child is an accessory and two children is a lifestyle. And it just changes. It changes everything. And it really does. It takes over your life in a way you become... your identity changes, my identity changes because the logistics are so overwhelming. And with one kid, you can sort of be like, yeah, I have this kid, but I also do this other stuff and this is who I am. And then once you introduce the second kid, you're like, oh my God, I live in kid world. That's what I do. Like there's toys everywhere and I have food on my shirt and like, this is who I am now, especially when they're little. And so that, to me, that's fine. Like that's, you can still find a way to go do your job and we worked and everything, but it changes the, in a, some way that I haven't been able to put a finger on, it just changes the orientation for me of the way that I saw myself in the world. I became 100% parent with some other things like on the side once I had two kids. And I think when I had just one kid, I was like a person who was this kind of like young guy in the world who also had a kid.
And that being, said, being that young guy who also has a kid, that's great. That is a great guy to be. Like that is the best accessory, right?
Because certainly. I mean, I don't know that I would never go. I mean, I can't even imagine. I don't know. Who knows? This is like really gets into that big thing about should you have kids or shouldn't you? And I don't believe you can tell people that either. To me personally, and my son asks me that all the time, don't you regret having us, Dad? If you didn't have us, wouldn't you like be jet setting around the world and all this? And I'm just like, you don't understand.
Yes, probably.
I'm just like, you don't understand because I can't explain it to a 14-year-old that I feel more like myself, better in the world, better as a human being because of the fact that I have kids and the way that I love you guys and what you bring to me and what I bring to you, that is my shit. I don't know how to define it. It just is. And like all this other shit that I would be doing, I can do that later. Like you're going to be out of my life at some point. And I get, you know, I get time after you're gone to do other stuff, but I'm 100% into this, man. Like this is what I do, you know? And so I can't imagine not doing it. I love it. And so with two kids, the reason the kid's mom and I were both only children. And so the reason we had two kids is because we were both only children. And our joke was no child should be subjected to dealing with the two of us alone. Like no, with no backup or reinforcement. That's not fair. It's not fair. It wouldn't be fair to Ezra to make him grow up the rest of his life with me and his mom, like two freaking weirdos that he just has to navigate on his own. So we were like, you need backup. You need reinforcements. We're bringing in someone to balance it out. I think it's great having two kids. I love it. I love both my kids. I love the way they interact with each other. I love that each of them who's growing up in this weird family that is all strange and stuff, that eventually in the world, they're going to be the only two people who understand where they came from. I love that they have each other. I think it's beautiful, but that is not a recommendation because you have to decide in your own life what you're going to do. And then once you do it, the decision's made, it's over. You never think about it again. You go do your life and all of it can work. That's all I'm saying.
I think the reasons not to have a second kid are like very obvious and clear. And like everybody knows, like having that second kid is just going to tear up your life and you can't afford to do it. And this is just a terrible time to do it. And you're basically just getting through the really, really, really hard first years of your first child. And like, why on earth would you want to go through that again? So I think we can sort of take as read all of the reasons for which having a second child is just a terrible idea and you shouldn't do it. That said, there are a couple reasons why it might be a really good idea and you maybe should do it. The first of those is each stage of a kid's life is over really quickly, and it's good to be able to hit that again. Like, it's good to have an infant again, and it's good to have a toddler again, and like, oh, look, first grade, what a great year, you get to do that again. And that has been a real sort of joy, is like, oh, remember how sweet this stage is, and we get to... like the first time it went by so fast and we didn't really know what it was. And now we really understand what it is and we get to do this a second time. And then the second thing is watching them form a little society of their own that's independent of you, and watching them like fight with each other, play with each other, make up games with each other. Watching one creature that you named call another creature by the name that you gave that other creature, it's kind of amazing. When I hear Eliza call Leo by his name, it kind of blows my mind a little bit.
You're like Zeus over there.
Yeah. And you've made this thing that runs independently of you. Otherwise, if you only have one kid, then all the relationships go through the parents. And like getting to see this relationship that doesn't go through the parents, that's great. So those are good reasons to do it. Does that like does that make it worth it for all the like? Does that overwhelm all? Does that counterbalance all of the terrible, all the reasons not to do it, all the reasons why it's a terrible idea? I don't know. What do you think, Rebecca?
I think that there's one thing that you guys aren't considering, and I'm going to throw it out there. Second kid is easier than your first kid. She now knows how to. Not lose herself and continue to make space for date nights and the things she enjoys and passion for her work. And I think if she decides to have the second kid, she can maintain some of those things because she now understands. I mean, her 2-year-old is still a baby. I mean, she's not like she's got like a 10-year-old and she's finally, mm-hmm. you know, enjoying her life again. Like mm-hmm. she's already managing a baby and enjoying her life. So here's the thing. The first baby is really hard because you have no idea what the hell you're doing. You have your second baby, and it is a lot less hard. You realize, you already know this, babies are kind of boring. No one has to tell you that, or you've not figured it out for yourself. Like, it's something you already know. Now you know that, like, when they have the screaming earache thing, that you don't have to run to the emergency room every time. Like, you've got that part figured out. And I'm assuming at this point she's got, like, some cool childcare situations figured out in terms of being able to go out and enjoy herself. Mm. And you can build that in, you know, obviously not in week one, week two, but I don't think you're going to have a baby and then wait 2 more years before you ever go out for a drink with your partner again. Like, I just don't think that's the way it's going to go for you because you've already figured it out. So I say if you're inclined to have more than one, go for it. I think the age difference you're talking about right now, if you want to have another one, is a good age difference. I think when they're too far apart, they don't get to enjoy the benefits of siblinghood. And when they're too close, sometimes they're all up in each other's grill. It seems like you could be potentially nicely spaced were you to kind of pull the goalie right now, as they say. So that's not, I'm not saying to, I'm not getting in your uterus and telling you what to do.
Come on, man.
I think you are. I think you are telling her what to do, and I think you should own that.
I'll say, I agree with Carvel. Only kids can be weird, and I don't think you should subject your kid to that lifestyle.
No, we are bad people. The world does not need more only kids, I can assure you. And to Rebecca's point, like, that's the one thing I can say with some certainty, which is the question of, like, spacing. We have 2.5 years. I actually think that's ideal spacing because what Rebecca said is right. You don't want them like 7 years apart because, I mean, not only is their relationship not as fruitful with one another as it might be because they're just in such vastly different parts of their own development, but also, man, you don't want to get 7 years in and you got a kid who's tying their shoes, who, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you just go back to the start line and start with the diapers and stuff. You don't want to do that. I think if you're already in crazy baby mode where there's like toys everywhere and you're going to have another one, just slide it in while you're already in chaos.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Batch them, cluster them.
You want to cluster them. And she's right. If they're like 18 months apart, they can really get on each other's nerves, but siblings get on each other's nerves anyway. I think the main thing you want to avoid, if you can, is the great distance between the kids where they don't get the benefit really of each other. And you don't get the benefit of being able to just like, because my dad used to always say me and my brother would hang out and then cousin would come over, then a bunch of kids would come over. And my dad would always say, the more kids, the easier it is. Because then he would never do any. He would just sit there and read the paper while we just ran up and down the stairs, you know what I mean, and occasionally broke something. And I realize now now I get it. Because when I have a bunch of kids in my house, it's like I don't have to do anything because they entertain each other, but you don't get that if the kids are 7 years apart. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So I think the unanimous mom and dad are fighting recommendation here is that Alyssa should have a second child as soon as she possibly can. Alyssa, go ahead, pull, as it were, the goalie, as Rebecca would say, in a year or two, give us a call and let us know how it's going and if we were right or wrong. We're looking forward to hearing from you again. Thanks for calling. If you have a parenting problem that you would like our advice on, you can give us a call at 424-255-7833.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some considered taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time now for recommendations. Rebecca, what do you recommend?
So I have a friend, Marianne, who I just recently found out listens to the show. So like, hi, Marianne. But anyway, she is the person who is often introducing me and my family to new games. And one of the ones that she brought our way a few years ago that we still play and still love is a game called Wits and Wagers, which is a combination trivia slash wagering gambling game where basically you get questions like, you know, how much does an empty 747 weigh? And then everybody has to guess and you put your guesses down and then you bet on whose guess is closest to the real answer. And then you advance in the game or get points in the game by, you know, getting close, you know, either by having people guess your answer the most often or by, you know, guessing closest to the real answer the most often. It's really, really fun. There's a regular edition for, you know, everybody, which I think is age appropriate for kids of all ages. It's also a family edition if you're a little more squeamish or just want all the references to be references your kids understand. We've got both editions. One of the questions, for instance, from the family edition is, you know, how many cubs is a female bear likely to have in her lifetime? Like, they're very, like, anybody could guess. There are questions like, how many feet are in a mile? There are some that people actually will know. And then there are some that are just, you know, no one could possibly know how much a 747 weighs unless they work at Boeing, I guess. So it's a really fun game. It's called Wits and Wagers. I think it's won some awards over the years. And we still really like it. We've been playing it for years as a family.
Great. I have a recommendation, which is going on a boat. We went on over the weekend, we went to my niece's bat mitzvah, and it involved going on a ferry boat, and it's just a completely ordinary commuter ferry at the other end of the Long Island Railroad. And for the kids, the like 45 minutes each way on the boat is the high point of the entire weekend trip. And so you should just find a way to get your kids on a boat. Doesn't have to be an expensive boat, doesn't have to be a glamorous boat, doesn't have to be a particularly comfortable boat or a boat that goes anywhere scenic. But like, if there is a ferry or some sort of commuter boat anywhere in your area, make that an activity for your kids, because they love going on boats. And it is actually kind of fun. Carvel, what do you recommend?
I'm going to go with an old classic here, which we reread recently, which is Kate DiCamillo's Flora and Ulysses. Which I don't know how many people out there know about this, but this is one of our favorite books as a family. It's the Illuminated Adventures of Flora and Ulysses is a children's novel by the awesome Kate DiCamillo. Anyway, this one tells the story of a girl named Flora and a squirrel named Ulysses who develops superpowers, and the hilarity and awesomeness ensues from there. This is another one that our kids like return to, even though they're both nominally too old for it. But it's just so much fun to read as a family. And I still read to them just because it's everyone likes it. And so, yeah, Flora and Ulysses by Kate DiCamillo is my recommendation for today.
That looks great. Okay, that is our show. Thanks very much for joining us. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Benjamin Frisch. If you have a question for us, once again, our number is 424-255-7833. Visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. For Carvell Wallace and Rebecca Lavoie, I'm Gabriel Roth, and we'll be back next week.